Window World is proud to present Kevin Keatsman Has Issues, simply the best for less at WindowsKansasCity.com.
It's a big weekend of football with interesting sub-stories around every game we like. The Missouri Tigers are on the road at South Carolina, playing against a wounded animal. The Gamecocks fired head coach Will Muschamp this week, and you know it's going to affect the game. We just don't know how. Eli Drinkwitz won at South Carolina last year as the coach at Appalachian State. He'll try to do it for Ole Mizzou Saturday night. K-State is battling COVID like crazy, 12 positive tests and a whole bunch of tracers. And this week, it's Farmageddon, the Cats and the Cyclones battling for a spot in the Big 12 title game. This game takes place Saturday afternoon. Will the Cats have enough players to make it happen? And if they do, will they be any good? And the Chiefs-Raiders rematch has turned into the bulletin board game. Victory laps, verbal shots, and a primetime slot on Sunday Night Football should really entertain America. We can't wait. Stan Weber's here to feast on it all and break down the matchups for us. Brought to you by BStock.net. This is your chance to buy brand new, warranty-covered electronics at a fraction of the price of retail. Stop buying things at Best Buy, Nebraska Furniture Mart, Costco. Those days are over. BStock.net is here for you. They've been in business for 27 years online at BStock.net, but now the retail store is opening up in Kansas City and Olathe at 151st and I-35. Typically what you do is you save about 30% on brand new Samsung TVs, LG, Vizio, Dell computers, HP, Lenovo, and yes, even Apple products. It's all at the BStock store, 151st Street and I-35 in Olathe. Again, open box, bad box, shelf life products, brand new, full warranties at BStock in Olathe. Santa Fe Air Conditioning and Heating, an American standard, built to a higher standard. We're putting an American standard system from Santa Fe Air in our new home. You should consider the same when it's time to make the switch. Mark at Santa Fe Air and the entire team, Chris and the gang out there, are simply terrific at matching the right American standard system with your home. Or maybe you're just looking for some service this winter or a regular service plan. I can't recommend Santa Fe Air Conditioning and Heating more than any other company. They're not the biggest, they're just the best. They make sure you're always happy and satisfied as a customer. It's a family-owned business, and they're really proud of their customer service. So if you need some service this winter in your heating system, call Santa Fe Air, 856-5801. That's 913-856-5801. Check them out online at santafeair.com. Or if it's time to replace your system, there's no better way than American standard, built to a higher standard, and Santa Fe Air Conditioning and Heating. And Ron Buck over at Buck Roofing, he's the best in the biz, commercial and residential. He does massive buildings like the Midland Theater downtown, or he can do your home. He can do a small little repair. I mean, this is an unbelievable business. He comes out to my mom's house one time a few years ago, and she had this little drip on the corner, and he got up there himself, and he fixed it, and it took him about 5 minutes. He didn't charge her a nickel. I said, Ron, there's got to be something for the service call. He goes, nope, you know, she's going to need a new roof here in a few years, and she'll give us a call when that time comes. This is great. This guy will get on a ladder, fix a small repair for you, and sometimes just drive away and say thanks, buy a roof from us when it's the time. They also do big projects like the roof at the Midland Theater. It's unbelievable. I mean, this is really quite a company. Ron's the man. 913-384-2680 online at rbuckroofing.com, and you'll sleep well knowing Buck Roofing fix the roof over your head. Big football weekend. A lot of intriguing matchups. Stan is here to talk about it. Hit it!
The Football Feast with Stan Weber is presented by Roberts Robinson Chevrolet Buick GMC in Excelsior Springs, online at robertsrobinson.com.
It's time for the Football Feast with our man Stan Weber, and it is feast kind of year. Feast time of year, I guess is the best way to say that. We got a little football this weekend, then Thanksgiving week, which is more football, and it's food, and it's turkey, and it's all the things that we love, and we love having Stan Weber on. Hi, Stan. How are you, buddy?
I'm doing great, Kevin, and well, your relatives may not want to hear it, but the food and the football are so great that even without having as much family this time, it's still going to be pretty good. You know, I mean, I like the family part of too on Thanksgiving, but I have to admit, football and food are really the key components. So I'm going to enjoy myself, even though we're going to stay a little bit closer away from others. You know what I mean? This is a get ready for safety, I guess, but this is going to be a fun week of football. Starting with our Chiefs and Raiders on Sunday. How about that? Who would have thought that the Raiders would fight well enough to be a factor, but they really are.
It will be fun. We'll get to that. I thought maybe we'd start this week with a little college football. And here's the question I want to ask you. I think you and I were in agreement at the beginning of the year that we're going to give a lot of coaches a lot of passes this year because of COVID and the challenges and things like that. Missouri's opponent this week, South Carolina, fired Will Muschamp. I've yet to meet anybody that feels sorry for Will Muschamp that he got fired. I don't know a lot of people that think he's a very good coach, so they don't feel bad for him. So maybe he's not the perfect example, but I'll ask the blanket question here. Is it legitimate to fire somebody in the year of COVID?
Well, I think that the machine that is big-time sports trumps out these other issues. And if we are going to, Kevin, at one point be able to speak for however long, you know, a half hour, hour straight about sports as if we don't need to factor in all that other stuff, I think it's fair that you can evaluate them that way. So I don't spend a lot of time when I'm watching the game going, oh, this is a COVID game, and I'm sure that player has a lot on his mind and isn't going to play it to a high enough level. So this has been kind of the chick thing to say for media people around the country. Well, you just can't evaluate him in this situation. You can't fire a coach during the COVID. There's too many variables. But I don't necessarily buy into that. I think that these administrators are going to react and do things in a way that are more consistent with the past. And I watch the games as if there's no COVID. I watch the games like they're the real deal and they matter. So I don't have that much of a problem. I'm going to jump in with the whole group and say we shouldn't fire him. I'm okay with it. But as you know, that was a statement early in the year. But Houston Texans coach got fired in the first 4 weeks or so. So here we go. And now South Carolina's without a coach also. So I think they're leaning to normalcy, that football is so big that no one gets a break. If you're not performing in football, they're going to fire you, and there are no excuses for getting a free pass.
I guess for me personally, there's a difference between the pros and college a little bit, although there shouldn't be. With the salaries that are involved, the pressure, the magnitude of the programs and stuff, I shouldn't look at it that way. Maybe that's just old school of me that I do kind of look at it that way. But this is a couple of cases where I could have made the case long before COVID that Will Muschamp shouldn't have been at South Carolina, or the Texans coach shouldn't have been down there. O'Brien shouldn't have been coaching the Houston Texans. I can make a lot of arguments for a lot of coaches that they shouldn't have been around this year. So I don't feel bad for those guys that they get fired.
Well, you know, again, I'm more open-minded to say if they want to treat this as normal, I'm fine with that. But, you know, when you talked about the Will Muschamp, I was saying that I was not impressed with him as the coach at Florida and was totally blown away that South Carolina would hire him. And we're monitoring that, Kevin, not only because we watch what's going on in the nation and in football, college football, big time. You know, Missouri is in this league. Missouri is in this division of the SEC East. So we look at it even more closely. And I know we opined right away. There's no doubt what my thought is. This is not restating anything. Go back and play the tape when I was on Between the Lines with you, Kevin. When Will Muschamp got hired, I said, mistake, South Carolina. He is not going to get it done. I thought he's the luckiest guy in the world to get a second chance. He was at Florida, a place where you should be first or second in the division almost every year, and he wasn't getting it done. So I am not a big Will Muschamp winning football coach guy. Yeah. So I am the least surprised guy in the world, and I really have no criticism for South Carolina other than I don't really get the firing it with 3 weeks left in the season. I just don't get what good that does. I mean, it's really unfair to the players. Let them play it out, you know, and then fire him in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. It's not that far away. There's no reason to run him out of town right now. So I don't like that. I like letting him finish the whole season. So that's the only gripe I would have. Let him finish the season. But the fact that he's gone at South Carolina is not good news for Missouri. I would rather have Will Muschamp continue as a coach at South Carolina if I'm a team competing against them, like the Tigers. So I think they can come out and more than likely they're going to find a better coach than what they had this year and last year.
Mike Bobo takes over for the rest of this season at South Carolina. Missouri plays South Carolina on SEC Network Saturday night at 6:30. Eli Drinkwitz, the coach for the Missouri Tigers at Appalachian State last year, went to South Carolina and won 20-15. Now he goes in with Mizzou and Connor Basilak as he tries to make it 2 years in a row winning at South Carolina. Missouri's had the most disjointed schedule of anybody in our area. They've had a lot of opponents switch on them week to week. And then, of course, last week the game postponed with Georgia because of their COVID problems. Missouri's had a really hard time getting any flow to their season. How do you see this game?
Well, I think the thing we've seen with Missouri which is no discredit to them, that most of these games I would describe are about their opponents. Probably not. I'm trying to think if I believe that statement. Probably not Kentucky. Missouri took the game away from Kentucky and played their style. Impressive. But we kind of called when I spoke to you before the LSU game and with the hurricane issues and moving the game to Columbia, Missouri and all of that. I kind of thought it was a setup that Missouri had a big chance that day. But if you think about Tennessee's win, Tennessee just played great. When they lost to Florida, Florida just played great. It seems like Missouri's been fine, but their opponent's been the story. And if you go along with that theme, in other words, I do not have my arms around what Missouri is. It's definitely not a negative. There's no reason why you shouldn't think positively of the Missouri season. It is really COVID affected, kind of from start to finish, still today. So many COVID issues, and we got some games to play. It'll be very important to play Arkansas finally with a legitimate Arkansas team. Missouri's been whipping them on the Friday after Thanksgiving the last few years, and it hasn't really been competitive. You knew you were going to win. This year, Kevin, that game's going to have a real lasting effect on what we think about Mizzou as we head into the offseason. So that, I'm really looking forward to that game. But here's a game where I think it's about South Carolina, Kevin, or let's put it this way. If Missouri's run defense is good enough to control the game, then I think Missouri wins. But I really think it's going to be about South Carolina. When you look at when they play some of their better football, they're able to run the ball. Last game against Ole Miss, they ran for over 300 yards. Kevin Harris ran for over 200 yards, and he has been a very physical running back for South Carolina, averaging 6.2 yards a carry. And then Deshaun Fenwick comes in, and he does a pretty nice job of being a changeup back. So those two guys, when they get rolling, if South Carolina can run the ball, Kevin, then I think they got a big chance to control this game and being at home, find a way to win. So I somewhat look at if South Carolina plays their best game, like we probably saw Tennessee play their best game, if they do, I think they'll beat Missouri. But the likelihood of that, I don't know. I mean, Mike Bobo's the new interim head coach. How do the players respond? There's some discontent in the locker room. Obviously, there's a changeover. Some players have opted out. You know, South Carolina, even in a mode of thought process to be able to be physical. Kevin, when you're a physical running team, when you're successful, your whole team's together. I mean, you walk out of the locker room, you set your jaw, and you have a physicality, a belief, a purpose. Well, that's not really what I would bet on with South Carolina right now. So I think Missouri should, in like 8 out of the 10 cases I would lay out for you, say win this ball game. But the one case that I would favor South Carolina is if they come out and say, we're going to run and do it successfully, they absolutely have the capability of doing it, Kevin. It worries me. If I'm a Missouri fan, I'm worried about them running the football, keeping it simple, and keeping Missouri's offense off the field.
In the Big 12, four teams are playing 2 games total in the league. These are 4 of the 5 teams that have a chance to get into the Big 12 title game. So a lot is going to be determined Saturday in the Big 12. Let's start with Kansas State at Iowa State. And the big picture question for me is, should Kansas State be playing this game? They reportedly have 12 players with COVID and maybe as many as another 2 or 3 dozen that have been traced that maybe can't play. Kleiman's been talking this week like it's been hard to practice. Kansas State has bit the bullet a couple of times this year and gone out and played, even though they were very, very shorthanded. Stan, what would be the harm in pushing this one away and saying we'll play it December 12th?
Well, that is definitely in play as a possibility. And when you say it, Kevin, it's not an illogical statement. K-State is very much on the edge in the protocol that they talk about being able to play the game. I do think, though, Chris Kleiman, based on what I hear him say publicly, I think that he has an attitude that don't ever kick the can down the road and assume things will be okay 2 weeks from now. This COVID situation that we're seeing now is different than it was 2 weeks ago. And we saw the NFL bring on much more stringent requirements for every football team. So are we running into just the start or the middle? Where are we with this new push of issues with COVID? So my point is Chris Kleiman might say, what happens if we never played that game? I mean, would I rather go out and let my kids get the opportunity to play than go out and set the tone and find a way to win like they did over Oklahoma? Remember, they were missing a lot of guys against Arkansas State, lost the lead. They carried over to the Oklahoma game. They had new players starting who had never played before and they beat Oklahoma. So I think there's a little bit of optimism that let's go out and see what we can do. Let's don't write this game off. If we have our left hand tied behind our back, so be it. Let's go find a way. Chris Kleiman has also built this team for kind of a COVID insurance. He has played more second team guys and even third team guys in the normal rotation than any coach I've ever seen in history. The K-State has double starters at almost every defensive position. They have so many tight ends and fullbacks, wide receivers that come in. Again, you could have a hit with COVID and still have guys who are experienced and on the field. So, I think Chris Kleiman's like, why don't we just go out and find a way to play this game? Because in 2 weeks, what happens if they say we can't play it? December 12th, that would be the replacement date, right? What happens if they just called it off and we missed an opportunity to play a game? So I think that is a motivator as well. Don't take anything for granted. And if you can anyway get your team there to fight, let's don't miss an opportunity to go try to win a ball game.
This is how difficult it is to be a college coach this year during COVID. And I've got this on pretty good authority, okay? So I can't tell you who I spoke with, but I spoke with a person who told me that the track team at Kansas State threw the most unbelievably great Halloween party you've ever seen. And every coach at every program at K-State is paying the price right now because it became a super spreader within the entire athletic department. So it's not just football, but there were athletes from all the teams at this Halloween party, and it became a spreader. And now every coach of every team is paying the price for that. This is just like an impossible situation for these coaches, Stan.
It is, because the funny thing is when you get into the details, you say person X is contact traced, okay? You're a close contact, Kevin. You're out for 2 weeks. You're in purgatory. You know, you don't have COVID, but you can't play. Okay, we're used to that, right? We know it's pretty stringent at the college level compared to the pros. They don't get tested every day, get back off the COVID list. But the surprising thing is when that close contact is with a player from another team on your campus, you know, that's what you're talking about. It's like, you were a close contact, yes. Well, was it because your roommate or because you're in the defensive line room? No, not really. It was a player from a different sport that they were close contact with. So you're right. You talk about a multiplier effect. When you get into the close contact situation, it really has affected a lot of things at K-State. And this is a real issue. There's no doubt about it. When K-State fans get ready to turn on their radio and TV and listen to us, hopefully, and watch the game, it's going to be a factor. It's going to be a factor a little bit like the Arkansas State game was. K-State is going to be playing not at full strength compared to what they wish they would be or might have been, like you said, at the West Virginia game. They played on Halloween. K-State was on the road on Halloween. But when you travel, only about 65 or 70 of your 130 players travel. So there's a lot of kids that remember they keep talking about those backups, young kids, guys who play scout squad and all that have been unavailable the last couple of weeks. They're probably the ones who were around Manhattan all weekend on Halloween, while the other guys, the starters, were out, at West Virginia. So it's a weird situation. It's a hard time to be a coach. And you're right. You know, what's really hard right now, Kevin, is if you're a head coach and you're thinking strategically, would I rather play a team like Iowa State on December 12th or today? Well, you might look at your lineup and look at injuries. You might look at COVID and all these things. And what you and I 100% of the time would come to the conclusion that a coach is going to do whatever they need to do to help them get the best chance of winning, right? Mm-hmm. But now you got kind of this COVID overlay of, well, it's not just a normal football thought. What about ethics? You know, what about, like I said, what happens if you miss the game? What happens if you say you don't want to play and then you're kicking yourself on Christmas going, I can't believe we didn't play Iowa State. If we would have went and won, we'd be in the Big 12 championship game. But because it got canceled, we never played it. I took away that opportunity. This is not an easy answer. So it isn't just about COVID. It's about competitiveness and that fight even in your brain. Kevin, I'm glad I don't have to make those decisions because you might say, I want to win. I want to win. Hey, how about let's delay this game?
Yes. So
guess what, Kevin? That mentality was there before the Oklahoma game. Just think about it. If you're Chris Kleiman and you're getting ready to play Oklahoma and you just had whatever it was, like 20 guys who would have played against Arkansas State that didn't get a play. I mean, guys that would have rotated in or started weren't available against Arkansas State. And now you're going on the road for mighty Oklahoma. You know what a normal, well-thought-out person would say who just wanted to win at football, we're not going to play against OU. Let's just say we don't have enough guys available because we probably can. Let's go. You know what? K-State would have never had that win in their pocket. They would have never known. So what's cool about these guys, Kevin, is you and I can be objective and sit back and look at odds and probabilities. What's really cool about these football players, and I know my son's coaching, my son's playing, Kevin, they don't think like us.
Right.
They are not intimidated. They think they're going to win. They really think they're going to win. So, you know, I don't ever want to infect them with the reality. I hope they don't listen to this podcast. You know what I mean? They think no matter who's available, they're going to go win the ball game. And that's what's really cool about what goes on at K-State football.
All right, let's talk about the ball game. I was on a podcast with Tim Fitzgerald earlier this week with GoPowerCat.com, and he told me he doesn't care about the players that are out and the COVID and all this and that. He said that he believes that he will be shocked if this is not a very close game. He can't believe that Kansas State is a 12-point underdog at this point, and he expects this to be a very close game no matter what. I think he was basing that on K-State's defense, the fact that they have just lined up and defended against almost everyone this year and done a pretty good job with that. Do you expect this game to go to the wire?
Yeah, I don't know how you wouldn't going into the game, because that's what happens with Iowa State versus K-State under many scenarios. Heck, Iowa State was a favorite over the Wildcats last year, and K-State controlled the game. K-State's won 10 of the last 11 ball games that these two teams have played. And K-State's defense really stepped it up against Oklahoma State. They held them to less than 300 yards total offense, Kevin. They did not let the running back duo get away. It was really just one good run by L.D. Brown, right, for about 50 yards. Other than that, K-State did a good job of tackling, keeping the guys in the pocket, they call it, getting your fits on defense, if you want to say. And a real strength of K-State football is the front wall. That front four, Kevin, is very good. Drew Wiley is playing to be considered first team all Big 12 at the defensive tackle position. Wyatt Hubert was already first team Big 12 last year, and they've been rotating through literally six defensive ends, four defensive tackles. They stay fresh. They all play at a fairly high level. They're energized when they're out there, and they've got some guys who can stand up to straight ahead blocking. What Iowa State does is they come off the ball. They don't trap a lot, Kevin. They don't pull linemen and tight ends. They just get a bunch of big boys up there on their offensive line. They play with as many as three tight ends, really superstar tight ends. And when they hand off the ball, they just zone block, just move ahead, and they count on their superstar running back, Breece Hall, to pick the hole. And he is very indifferent. If he sticks his nose up between the center and the guard and tries to grind for 4 to 7 yards, or if you overplay the outside, he'll just kick it on out, spin around the outside, kind of like a Marcus Allen look, very smooth, doesn't look like he's going super fast, like he's in a hurry, and he turns a corner, and he picks up 10 yards like it's no big deal. And if you don't have the right angle, he'll take it to the house like he did against Oklahoma State. So they really rely on Breece Hall to just read your blocking scheme. K-State has a chance, though, with the run defense that they played against Oklahoma State. If they can do that and slow down Breece Hall, it comes down to, you know, don't blame having some big runs, Kevin, but mostly third down. You know, football's won in close games on third down. So if it's third and four, the ball is handed off to Breece Hall. Is he going to make 2 yards and K-State forces Iowa State to punt, or is he going to make 4 or more yards and keep the drive alive? That's going to be the real key. He'll get his yards here and there, but will he be able to make the runs on third down, or will Iowa State have to pass? And K-State has an advantage. If they know Brock Purdy has to pass, in the K-State defense goes into an advantageous situation. So it's going to be about stopping the run with Breece Hall. I think he's the best player in the Big 12 right now, along with Tylan Wallace, maybe Oklahoma State's wide receiver. Breece Hall has been fantastic this year and doesn't look tired out, beat up at all. And he's getting more and more confidence. He's physical enough up the middle. He's fast enough and smart enough to read blocks and get to the outside. But K-State matches up pretty well in that area. We'll see. Force Iowa State to pass when you know they're going to pass, and that's an advantage for K-State.
Stan, the other game in the Big 12 is Oklahoma and Oklahoma State. We know this about Mike Gundy. He doesn't beat Oklahoma. So let's do this exercise. If Kansas State is able to beat Iowa State somehow, and then Oklahoma wins, all hell breaks loose in this league. I mean, everybody's got a couple of losses. It's a sprint to the finish, a couple of games left. The tiebreaker formulas and stuff at that point would just be insane. We'd have 5 teams competing for 2 spots. This could be absolutely crazy if K-State and Oklahoma win this weekend.
It absolutely, because your leading conference team has two losses right there. And will Texas continue to pull rabbits out of their hat? You know, why wouldn't they? They've been a favorite and will be a favorite the rest of the way down the stretch. So Texas is right in there. It will be crazy. And Oklahoma just hopes that it's not K-State and Iowa State left at the end, because that's their two losses. And they are not in a good tiebreaker situation with them. But they have the wins over Texas, and in your example, they'll have the win over Oklahoma State. But yes, we could be going deep into the tiebreakers, because K-State has Texas left on the schedule and Iowa State has Texas left on the schedule as well. So this week's going to set some information. I mean, if Iowa State and Oklahoma State win, that will really put them in a great position to separate from the others. But if it doesn't go that way, we have a lot of football to be played, even though there are only two regular season games left for K-State after this week.
Yep, should be wild. All right, Sunday night at 7:20, it's the Chiefs and Raiders. Dan, a lot of talk this week about the Raiders' little victory lap around Arrowhead when they won here last month. Now Travis Kelce's been speaking out this week, telling the entire world that wants to listen that for the Raiders, Sunday night's game is their Super Bowl. There's nothing bigger for them on the horizon than playing the Kansas City Chiefs in Las Vegas. I love Kelce's confidence. I kind of expect the Chiefs to play a very, very, very good football game, a serious football game, like they're taking this seriously now, and maybe they haven't done that in the division every single time that they've played these opponents. What do you expect to see in this one Sunday?
Well, the Chiefs, whenever they've really needed to be serious, have rang the bell this year and just played unbelievably good football. So I would expect the same. I think when you look back at the Raiders game, you know, there's one thing that we need to take into account before we give the Raiders a ton of credit. And I'm willing to give the Raiders a ton of credit, okay? Especially Derek Carr. I've been more positive about him than almost anybody around in this area, Kevin, that I think he and Gruden are putting something together. I think he's a dangerous quarterback. He has Waller to throw the ball to. It's always great when a quarterback has a simple throw to the tight end. He has a running game where he can get the ball to Josh Jacobs and get some work then. And Devontae Booker has done a good job, and he's also got some speed on the outside. Gruden's a better coach and all of that. But I want to point out one thing. There's been a great set of history all the way back to 1970 when Monday Night Football first came on board, Kevin. Teams do not spark. Their legs are not as fresh. They do not respond as well after they play Monday Night Football. If you want to look at some of the better teams and when they lost in NFL history, you know, it's not true of every time, but there's definitely a trend that when you play that lackluster game, it's often after a Monday Night game. 6 days later, you play a Sunday game, and you just don't quite have the spark, the class that you normally have. That was the situation when the Raiders beat the Chiefs, okay? The Chiefs played only 6 days before that game, and the Chiefs just were not themselves that day. The offensive line did not hold up well. You know, the Chiefs just did not cover as well as they normally do in the secondary, just were not making the plays, and they had just played the New England Patriots 6 days before. So I want to point that out. Now the Chiefs have not only the 7 days rest, but you got the Andy Reid factor of a bye week. You do not want to bet against this, Kevin, until proven otherwise. Andy Reid is very good after a bye week. They're not playing on 6 days. They got an opponent, I think, that they can be upset with. They've got a reason to get fired up and get ready to play. This all leads to a lot of advantages for the Chiefs. They're the better team. I expect them to take advantage of those. If it's the drive around the stadium and the bus or whatever it is, I think you're going to see a sharp version of the Chiefs. And we didn't before. That said, let's talk up the Raiders a bit. They've separated themselves and definitely are the team to beat for the Chiefs in the AFC West. Remember, it was a little muddled. Wasn't a fun question, Kevin, when you started the season. Who do you believe in the most, the Chargers, the Broncos, or the Raiders? That was a very, very good question for people to opine on. But now that's over. The Raiders program is in place. They are now ahead of the Chargers. They're ahead of the Broncos. And they are the threat to the Chiefs with an old rivalry factor. Really looking forward to the game. And obviously, I can make a case that the Raiders can compete with the Chiefs. They really are a much better team. They have a chance to make it to the playoffs. They could even dream about winning a division. And these are pros. It's not like just because the Chiefs are going to get mad. It's not like, ooh, Alabama's mad. Well, when Alabama gets mad, they're going to beat you because you're not nearly as good. This is the pros. You know, yeah, the Raiders can put a game plan together and execute and be right there with the Chiefs. But if we play this thing out 100 times, I think it's going to go well for the Chiefs. I think they'll be rested, ready. And I fully expect the Chiefs to win, even though I do think the Raiders are a legitimate foe and on the verge of being a legitimate playoff team this year. Kevin, with 7 playoff teams, I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Raiders are a part of that 7-team group.
So I don't remember Tyrann Mathieu making a single play in that first game. And I remember Daniel Sorensen being out of position and confused 3 or 4 times. It was really the only bad game Sorensen's played all year. Why was the secondary so confused in that first game? It obviously led to massive plays over the top. The Raiders got behind the Chiefs. It's not skill. The Chiefs have their cornerbacks and safeties are plenty good enough to cover the Raiders and play well defensively. Why do you think they were so confused in the first game? And I can't even imagine in a million years we're going to see anything like that Sunday night.
Well, my best guess, and obviously it is a guess, is I think listening to Steve Spagnuolo being interviewed this week, Kevin, he's very, very frank with the press, I think. If you look at him, you understand football. He really puts a bright spotlight on things. And I think he put the team in a bind a couple of times, and they paid for it. You know, the call that he made and then the play the Raiders ran just was a perfect scenario for the Chiefs to be in a bind and put their guys at an angle where they were in trouble. And Derek Carr threw the ball accurately. You know, sometimes you have that situation and the ball flies with 1 foot over the receiver's head and we don't care about it. But he really delivered the ball accurately when he had his shots downfield or that deep crossing route over the top. It causes the teams a lot of problems, especially Chiefs. When the Chiefs do it with Tyreek Hill, it causes everybody problems. But I think, you know, that really told me a lot, that I think that he is going to call the game a little differently than he did before and put the Chiefs in a better position. Steve Spagnuolo is very aggressive. He is as aggressive as any defensive coordinator in the league about not sitting back and bringing heat. And I think now he's going to have a reevaluation. You know, you could easily choose as a Chiefs to say, I don't really care if Josh Jacobs runs for 7 yards and gets the first down. You know what? I don't think the Raiders can score by running good plays 12 straight times. I'm not going to let him have the easy shot over the top. I'm not going to put my corner in a situation where he's man-to-man with a very improved receiving core that the Raiders have. Maybe you'd say we're going to take the tight end away, like a Bill Belichick, and we're just going to take his safety blanket away. What happens if they take Darren Waller out, Kevin, and double-team him and say someone else beat us? You know, I think they're just going to reevaluate everything with a complete different level of respect. And I don't think that they probably believed the Raiders could beat them from the line of scrimmage all the way to 50 yards downfield. But I think the Raiders have proven now that they really have a solid running game, a great middle passing game to the tight end, which very few teams have, Kevin. The Raiders are like the Chiefs with Kelce. You need 7 yards, it's there all the time. Just have your tight end post up and throwing the ball. But the other thing that makes it lethal, and the Chiefs know this, is that they press you 40 and 50 yards downfield. So how do you guard against all three? And I think now the Chiefs understand that Derek Carr is functioning at a higher level right now, and he's going to make those throws. He's not going to sit in the pocket and take a sack. He's going to get that ball accurately downfield. So the Chiefs are probably going to have to just reevaluate completely on defense, choose which way they want to slow these Raiders down and put them in the least likely chance to win. And it may be, surprisingly, dare them to run. Do not let him throw the ball to Waller. Do not let him throw the ball deep and say, are you really going to run for 5 yards per play for 12 straight plays and score on us? I don't think you will. So we'll see. I think Spagnuolo is going to change up his strategy. But the Raiders are good on offense. You know, their Achilles heel, Kevin, is the Raiders haven't been very good on defense. And that was the surprising thing, is they were able to rush only 4, get pressure on Mahomes, and stay back and play fairly good coverage. And we'll see if they can do that again. If they do that again, that's going to be a major step for the Raiders, because right now it's a very good offense and a below-average defense they're throwing out there.
We've all become Steelers watchers at this point. The Steelers play Jacksonville this weekend as their easy schedule seemingly just continues. Last week, the Jags pushed the Green Bay Packers all the way to the brink in that football game. I don't want to do too much necessarily on the Steelers-Jaguars here, but this is the NFL. Do you see the Steelers as the kind of team that could lose a game like this and drop one? And I mean, we got a whole half of a season left here for the Chiefs and the Steelers to battle for the one seed. How does it play out, and should we even be paying attention to the Steelers-Jaguars?
Yeah, you pay attention because you don't know when that week's going to spark, Kevin. You don't know when an opponent's going to put together the game. For instance, if you're an NFC watcher and you're in a battle with the Packers for whatever reason, home field advantage, better record, everybody cares about everybody in their conference, Kevin. That's so cool about the NFL, isn't it? Win your division, you get a home game. So you could argue, just stick and focus on your division. Yeah, that's first step. But guess what? You want to have a better record than the other three conference division winners. So perfect example. I was watching that Packers game, and I was thinking about all the fans that hoped the Packers would lose, and they should have lost that game. You, out of four games that the Packers are favorite, playing middle of the road or worse teams, there's probably going to be one who plays well enough on that day where they make some mistakes. And the question is do you lose that game? And the Packers should have lost to Jacksonville. They did not. So that is just a giant missed opportunity. As an NFL fan, Kevin, that's the kind of game I'm sitting on the edge of my seat. So watch for three quarters. See what happens. Is Jacksonville going to – is it one of those days where Jacksonville has a chance? And if they do and you get to the fourth quarter, you got to root like crazy that they don't only make it close, that they get over the hump. Because more than likely, if you look at the Steelers' schedule, Kevin, you could pick three games, maybe four, and go, I bet the Steelers at most are going to lose one of these. But I couldn't tell you, Kevin, which one it is. I would be able to tell you at the end of the third quarter, this is the week. And I would have done that. If I would have called you, Kevin, last week at the end of the third quarter, I would have said, this is it. If you're rooting against the Packers, this is the day. Jacksonville needs to finish this thing, win the game, or you're missing out on a giant opportunity. And the Chiefs need it. They need the Steelers to dump a game somewhere. Can't predict that it's going to happen this week, but one of the next three or four opponents that the Pittsburgh Steelers are favored over is going to give them a game. And it could be this week. Who knows?
We will all be watching. Stan, have a great call with Kansas State, Iowa State on Saturday afternoon on the K-State Network. Enjoy all the football on Sunday. We will talk with you after the holiday next week. We'll have the Steelers and Ravens to talk about at that point. They play on Thursday night, Thanksgiving night, so maybe the short turnaround will hurt the Steelers a little bit. We'll have a lot more to talk about after Thanksgiving. How's that sound?
Yeah, you said it well. How about the Steelers looking forward to playing the Ravens on Thursday? Not keeping their focus helps Jacksonville, but can't wait for that Thursday night game. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. You may not be able to be with your families as much. Hopefully you can Zoom them in, go virtual, have some meetings, but enjoy the football. This is a great time of year. Basketball starts in college basketball and a ton of football games starting this weekend and rolling right on through the next weekend, Kevin. So I can't wait. Chiefs Raiders, it was awful not having the Chiefs last week. It was awful. I'm so excited to have the Chiefs playing this week.
And we were excited to have you here. Thank you, Stan, as always. Appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Kevin.
All right, Stan Weber on Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. That's your football feast. You're ready to rock this weekend, courtesy of our friends.
Thanks for listening to Kevin Keatsman Has Issues. For additional VIP-only podcasts, live streaming of breaking news, sports wagering tips from the experts, and in-person special events, visit kkhasissues.com and become a patron for as little as $5 per month.